You say estrogen is the archetype of femininity. Why is that?
Estrogen's that hormone that most defines you as a woman. It gives you breasts and hips and inside your body. Estrogen buffers your mood, keeps you on task. It's nature's Prozac. It adjusts the level of serotonin, another really important neurotransmitter, so that it's more readily in supply. Serotonin's in charge of your mood, your sleep, and your appetite. I have to tell you a quick little joke here. So Alexi, my interviewer, made this joke that we should call it serotonin, as in like Dr. Serotonin. I just thought that was hilarious. Anyway, estrogen is responsible for the first half of your menstrual cycle, if you're still having them. It builds up the cells that line your uterus, kind of like shag carpeting, and protects a developing fetus. So if you don't get pregnant, if conception doesn't occur, then that lining is released about every 28 days as your period. If conception does occur, estrogen combined with progesterone thickens and deepens that lining for the fertilized egg to settle into and grow. Estrogen's also a big part of your sex drive. It makes you feel interested in sex. It makes you juicy and lubricated in your joints, also your lady garden, your vagina. And it also will help to support your ability to roll with the punches. So this is some new research done in monkeys that's kind of curious. And what we found is that for folks who have something called the short serotonin gene, which is a gene that has multiple roles, it's in charge of how much threat you perceive in your environment and also how fast you can get reactive in a situation where you're challenged. For folks who have a short serotonin transporter gene, when they have plenty of estrogen around, like up until somewhere between ages 35 and 45, they behave as if they've got the normal genes, which are called the long genes, your long. And once estrogen starts to decline, which typically happens in the second part of perimenopause, as you've heard me describe, that makes people start to feel a lot more stressed out and like they're in amygdala hijack. They just feel like they perceive danger all the time.
You say that estrogen and progesterone, when they're in balance, perform a beautiful dance. What do you mean by that? And what happens when one of those hormones has two left feet, or if progesterone tries to lead?
Well, it's true. You want to have this lovely dance between estrogen and progesterone. You want to have a tango between the two of them. And you want an even balance between the two hormones. And they should behave as if they're well-matched dance partners. And this idea of balance is really important. Basically, estrogen and progesterone have these opposing yet interdependent effects. So on the one hand, estrogen makes the cells of your uterus grow, and progesterone stops that growth, stabilizes it, and then releases it as your period. Estrogen stimulates your breast cells to grow, progesterone prevents that from happening, and prevents cysts from developing or making your breasts feel painful. Estrogen makes you retain salt and water, and progesterone is a natural diuretic. Estrogen also creates progesterone receptors. They're like the locks that are on a cell's nucleus into which a hormone will insert, kind of like a key. And progesterone makes estrogen receptors jam up and shut down. So the idea here is that you want a balance, almost like the tide between estrogen and progesterone. And if you have too much of one, such as too much estrogen, you're more likely to have fluid retention, breast tenderness, painful periods, maybe even endometriosis, mood swings, maybe just irritability or anxiety, depression. You can feel foggy, sleepless, weepy, maybe hard to lose weight. You might have more headaches and migraines. You may even notice that the skin around your nose and your T-zone is more red, as in rosacea.
So what is it that happens in our bodies to cause estrogen to rise?
Well, the idea with estrogen is that you want to use it and lose it. You want to break down the estrogen and get rid of it. so that it doesn't build up in your blood, in your liver, and cause estrogen dominance. So there's two different ways that your body does that. The biochemistry is not important for you to fast track your hormone cure, but just so you know what those two ways are. Number one is hydroxylation, and number two is conjugation. But the main point here is you want to use estrogen and lose it before it has a chance to backflip, cause you to have estrogen dominance, maybe even increase your chance of something bad like breast cancer.
What are the root causes of excess estrogen?
Several things can make you increase the level of estrogen that you have. Anything that interferes with how you use estrogen and lose it can actually make you produce or accumulate too much of the not so good estrogens. And some of those factors include, number one, the aging ovary. So as your ovary gets older, you run out of ripe eggs, you're more likely to be making too much estrogen compared to progesterone. Your ovaries just don't make as much progesterone, and so you get out of balance. If you have cortisol that's too high, that can also lead to an imbalance and lead to estrogen dominance. A third factor is if you're exposed to some of those chemicals that we've been talking about, the endocrine disruptors. We call them xenoestrogens, the ones that bind to the estrogen receptor, and there's, about 700 of those. And then there's also some really important nutritional factors, how much fat you eat, how much fiber, and also how much alcohol you have.
So there's been a link to high estrogen and breast cancer. What is that link?
Yeah, well, we know that certain xenoestrogens can definitely put you at a greater risk of breast cancer. DDT is famous for this. These synthetic chemicals are like estrogen in the body. I think of them as almost like party crashers. They bind to the estrogen receptor, and they also get stored in your fat. But the problem here is that your estrogen receptor is a bit promiscuous. It binds to a lot of different hormones, not just estrogen. And it especially binds to these 700 known xenoestrogens. So that's one factor. Another factor is how long you're exposed to estrogen. That's another risk factor for breast cancer. So that means that people who have early onset of menstruation, so their puberty comes early, they have a greater risk of breast cancer. And I'm really sensitive about that because I started my period when I was 10. So this puts you at a greater risk of breast cancer. It's just a long exposure to estrogen over time. We also know that for women before menopause, if you have higher estrogen levels, like I did in my 30s, that puts you at a greater risk of breast cancer later on. We also know that women who have higher levels of estrogen have more density on mammograms. So that's another way that you can sort of track this. The other factor that I think is important when it comes to estrogens and breast cancer is the study that I mentioned a fair amount. It's not the one that makes me the most popular, but it's one that was done at Harvard in the Nurses' Health Study where they found that 3 to 6 servings of alcohol per week is linked to a higher level of bad estrogens and a greater risk of breast cancer. So if you have excess estrogens, you want to really look at your relationship to alcohol. Do you have a sticky relationship? One of the things I really recommend you do is to go on a periodic detox. In fact, you're going to hear about this a little bit later on. I've got a new detox program that I'm developing right now, and you'll hear about it soon. But the idea is that I want you to detox ideally every 3 to 6 months, depending on how many toxins you're exposed to. And it's really important when it comes to alcohol, as well as gluten and sugar and some of these other things that we are talking about in Fast Track Your Hormone Cure. It's important that you're able to get off of alcohol for a minimum of 2 weeks and not have a problem with that, not feel like you're white knuckling your way through it. We know that 10% of the population has alcoholism, but I think there's also a fair amount of people who've got a sticky relationship with alcohol. It's not quite alcoholism, but it's hard to go 2 weeks without it. So that's a diagnostic test that you can do if you think you might have a sticky relationship to alcohol.
So what can I do if I have too much estrogen?
What to do? So if estrogen's high, if it's stepping on the toes of the progesterone, what we want to do is apply the Gottfried protocol. So let me start with step one of the Gottfried protocol. You know that you can just dive into the lifestyle changes first, but I do want you to be careful about some of the other interventions that we're talking about, especially step two of the Gottfried protocol. I really want you to be working with a clinician for step two so that you've got a clear diagnosis and maybe you're tracking these numbers. So what are the lifestyle changes? Well, you just heard me go on and on about reducing alcohol. We know that a very small amount, I mean, we've never seen such a small amount linked to breast cancer before. That was published for the first time in the Journal of the American Medical Association in 2011. So the safe amount seems to be 3 servings or less per week, but a lot of it depends on your genetics and how you're using the alcohol in your body. So first part is reducing alcohol. Another one that's important is to cut caffeine. You've heard me say this before when we're talking about cortisol, but it's important when it comes to excess estrogen too. You want to reduce your exposure to xenoestrogens. You know, I think about how when you go to health food stores, maybe you go to Whole Foods or a place like that, and you see all those water containers that say that they're BPA free. And this is not just one of those, you know, good idea or greenwash. It actually is really good for your health. So you want to avoid the xenoestrogens. You also want to be careful about eating conventional meat and conventional dairy. We know that people who eat a lot of saturated fat that comes from the conventionally raised animals, such as cows in the US, and also the conventional milk, that's not so good for you. We don't have as much data, especially the large scale data that makes me do the happy dance. We don't have as much of that on grass-fed beef and other sources of meat that are organic or just safer for you. We know that eating prunes is helpful. Your grandmother was right about that. And we know that fiber is so important. I can't say enough about fiber. So you've probably heard me say this before. We are so lousy at fiber. You know, we think we're doing a good job, but on average in the US, women are getting about 14 grams a day. And you want to be getting somewhere around 40, 45, 50 grams a day. So most people have to take a medicinal supplement. That's something that you will see in my store at thehormonecurebook.com. Losing weight is also helpful because your fat cells make the estrogens that are not so good for you, the ones that have done a backflip like estrone. I also think it's important to go to sleep before 10 p.m. My friend Marcy Shimoff actually calls this catching the angel train. And the idea is that every hour of sleep that you have before midnight, it really helps your hormones. It helps your circadian rhythm. It helps you prevent cancer. It creates a good neighborhood. She even says that every hour of sleep that you get before midnight counts double the hours that you get between midnight and whenever you wake up. And I really agree with that. Exercise is also helpful. And then the last part of the Gottfried protocol, step one, is something called DIM. Diindol methane. And this is a supplement that really helps you make more of the good estrogens and less of the bad estrogens. It's a really cool supplement. The one that I like is from Integrative Therapeutics. It's called Indolplex. And this particular form of DIM has been shown to help people who have excess estrogens, including a randomized trial that was done recently in people who have abnormal pap smears. Now, I'm saying this because I don't want you, if you have an abnormal pap smear, just to take DIM, but I would want you to work with your clinician. And as part of what your clinician recommends for you, you might want to consider taking something like DIM because it helped women who had abnormal paps get better. So don't just rely on that in terms of a treatment. I would never want you to do that. You need to have a really clear diagnosis. But we definitely know that if you take a supplement like Indoplex, it helps you with making more of the good estrogens and fewer of the bad estrogens. There's still some debate about whether that actually helps you with preventing things like breast cancer. But what I find is that it definitely helps people who have estrogen dominance if you're looking at certain symptoms, such as fibroids, excess bleeding, things like that. The other part with DIM that's curious is that we know cruciferous vegetables help you with balancing your estrogen and progesterone, especially if you have too much estrogen. And if you take DIM, it's the equivalent of having like a bushel of Brussels sprouts. Now, I don't know about you, but I'm not going to eat a bushel of Brussels sprouts when I'm sitting at the dinner table. So this is one way to get the benefit, but then the problem, the caveat, if you have any issues with your thyroid, is that it can slow down your thyroid. So you want to be careful about that. You always want to cook them at least lightly. And if you're taking DIM, you just want to be mindful of how it might impact your thyroid as well. That's step one. Step two of the gut-free protocol is herbal therapies. So here's some of the things that are proven. You can eat seaweed. So seaweed is effective, but not quite as good as some of the other things I want to mention. And you got to be careful with seaweed. So seaweed has iodine in it. For folks who have autoimmune thyroiditis, also known as Hashimoto's or Hashi's, if your immune system's attacking your thyroid, you can actually have problems if you get too much iodine. People also have problems with too little iodine. I think you know what I'm talking about here. We want the Goldilocks position with pretty much all of these nutrients, all of these hormones, all of these brain chemicals. So what are some of those other herbal therapies that are proven? Resveratrol, turmeric, and hops. And then in terms of bioidentical therapies, especially those that are over-the-counter, if you don't resolve your symptoms with those first two steps of the Gottfried protocol, you can also consider taking melatonin. Melatonin. You want to be careful with melatonin because if you get too much of it, it actually can backfire. I'm a fan of 0.1 to 1 milligram a day. I like lower doses, the minimum dose that's effective. The other thing you want to be careful of with melatonin, and this is not in my book, is that for people who are early risers, you know, the morning people among you, early risers sometimes can have their circadian rhythm shortened if they take melatonin. So you want to be aware of that.
What will get to happen for me when my estrogen is in balance?
Yeah, when you have your estrogen in balance, you feel feminine, you feel content, you sort of feel that sense of the archetype of femininity on your side. I would even call it higher feminine. Your moods are steady. You find that your body rests well. You're lubricated. You've got enough blood flow to your lady garden, your genitals, and you're able to have the kind of orgasms that you want to have. You're not wondering, was that just an orgasm? I can't tell. No, you're having toe-curling orgasms. And your breasts feel normal in size. They're not too big as they might be with excess estrogen, or too small and kind of pancake or banana-like. And if you're cycling, you're able to navigate through your menstrual cycle, noticing ovulation, attuned to the natural cycles. Bonus prize if you're linked up with the lunar cycle. But you're not burdened by ovarian or breast cysts or painful heavy periods or PMS. And if you have fibroids or endometriosis, you enter what's called remission, where your symptoms resolve. They start shrinking. This is super exciting. It's something that happened to me in my 30s that I don't talk about a lot. I don't talk about in the book. But I had two fibroids in my 30s. And when I started to pay attention to estrogen and I got my estrogen into balance, into that tango with progesterone, and I had a ratio of progesterone divided by estradiol of 300, which is really the magic, where you have 300 times more progesterone molecules than estradiol molecules in your body. When I was able to get to that place, my fibroids shrank.
So on the flip side, what happens when my estrogen is too low? What part of my life does that impact the most?
Low estrogen affects many different things. And I think for people who are in menopause or even premature ovarian insufficiency, you'll understand what I'm talking about here. It's really common to have problems with weight and appetite when estrogen starts to drop. We're talking about the second phase of perimenopause under normal circumstances. So that usually is between 45 and 55 for women. Average age for your last menstrual period is age 51. So we know that low estrogen stimulates appetite. We've got some research from Yale that shows that estradiol uses the same biochemical pathways in the body as leptin. Leptin, another really important hormone that's released by fat. And when estrogen is activated,
what you know, if you've got just the right amount of estrogen, you'll find that your appetite is more normal. It also affects sex. So estradiol makes your genital skin sensitive and moisturized. It makes the nerve supply happy because there's plenty of blood going where it needs to go. And so when women have a low level of estrogen, too low for them, and that varies from woman to woman, then the hormonal control center in her brain just assumes that she's in danger. And the last thing she needs is to become pregnant. And so the vagina gets dry. The nerves that densely populate the clitoris, the G-spot, the labia minora, those thin inner lips of the vulva, they start to disappear. And then another aspect that you might imagine from what we've been talking about is mood. So we know that estradiol fills your tank with serotonin. It's that beautiful feel-good brain chemical that is involved with mood, sleep, and appetite. You can see the overlapping roles of some of these things. And when you have a problem with mood, with low estrogen, it can make you feel cranky. It can make you feel irritable or even depressed. Low estrogen also affects your bones. You can have bone loss. It can be mild, which is also known as osteopenia, age-related bone loss. Or it can be more serious, known as osteoporosis. This is a problem especially for the skinny minis. So women who are 127 pounds or less are at greater risk of this. Finally, you can have problems with hot flashes and night sweats. We don't totally understand why this is. We don't know the mechanism. But many women have an issue with temperature regulation when they're going through perimenopause and menopause. And estrogen is part of it. Progesterone's part of it too, because the two travel together.
Speaking of hot flashes, what can I do to make these better?
Hot flashes. Okay, here's my top five. Number one, paced breathing. This is super cool. It actually reduces hot flashes by 44%. Not too shabby. What you do is you breathe deeply, deep belly breaths. And you can even put your hands on your belly right now and slow down your breath. And inhale for a count of five. And exhale for a count of five. So this is something that you could practice for 20 minutes. This helps a lot with reducing hot flashes and night sweats. I'm also a big fan of acupuncture. So these are my top five. Number one, paced breathing. Number two, acupuncture. We know that acupuncture is very effective in this situation as well as when you have PMS. Number three, vitamin E. That's sort of easy. Vitamin E got a bad rap because there was a study showing that it doesn't seem to help with heart disease across the general population, but that doesn't mean that it's not going to help you with hot flashes. And this has been shown in several studies. Another interesting new player is a pollen extract, pollen, P-O-L-L-E-N. And this is an herbal remedy that's called FEMAL, F-E-M-A-L. There were at least two studies showing that it reduces hot flashes and improves quality of life. Finally, number three, rhubarb. Rhubarb, it's been proven to reduce hot flashes in two trials.
So how do I know if I have low estrogen?
Well, there's many ways to check for low estrogen. You know, one of the things that I often make a joke about is that when you're figuring out whether to check your hormones, I never understood that doctors were trained to tell women that you don't need to check your hormones. They're too variable. It's not worth it. And yet when you're trying to get pregnant and you're having trouble getting pregnant, that's when they check pretty much every hormone in the book. And I didn't understand why checking hormones when you're trying to get pregnant is valuable and it's not at other times. So to me, something is fishy there. And so I find it very helpful to follow some of these levels. You can certainly use the questionnaire as a way of figuring this out. But some of the different ways that we check for estrogen, like especially if you're trying to get pregnant or, you know, I had my second child when I was in my later 30s. And when I was in my mid-30s and I was trying to figure out, okay, how much time do I have? I actually ran this test. So let me tell you what this test is. On day 3 of your menstrual cycle, where day 1 is the first day of bleeding, you can measure two hormones, FSH, which stands for follicle stimulating hormone, and estradiol. This is one of the key estrogens of your reproductive years. It's spelled E-S-T-R-A-D-I-O-L. So on day 3 of your menstrual cycle, you can measure your FSH and your estradiol level. Now, FSH can vary from cycle to cycle. It kind of depends on the ripe eggs that we've been talking about. But it basically tells you whether you might have some diminished ovarian reserve, which is total doctor talk for the idea that you might be running out of ripe eggs. So that's one of the ways that you can measure. Honestly, I still feel like it's really helpful to measure through questionnaires. So that's why I want you to use that questionnaire that we've been telling you about at thehormonecurebook.com/quiz. One other piece that I wanted to mention, you might have heard me say this before, is that for women starting around age 43, I've talked about this with Dr. Luann Brizendine, who wrote about it in The Female Brain, we become more resistant to estrogen. We don't respond to it the same way in our brains. And you probably can feel that. I mean, that's when you start to develop CRS. Does anyone know what CRS is? That's when your memory starts to fail you and you can't remember bleep. Okay, so that's it on low estrogen.
You say food plays a big role in estrogen levels. How?
Yeah, how you eat, what you put on your fork definitely affects your estrogen levels. We know that lower body fat can cause low estrogen levels, and this can lead to losing your period. It can lead to something called amenorrhea, which is when you go without a period for 3 months or longer. So if your body fat's low, and I recall, you know, I have a sister who's a competitive athlete, and when her body fat gets low, she'll lose her period, and I am like totally on her. Because when your body fat's lower than 21% of total body mass, normal range for women between the ages of 20 and 39 is about 21 to 33%, over age 40, 23 to 34%. When you have a low body fat, less than 21%, your brain, you know, basically NASA in your brain, Houston, is feeling like you're in crisis. You know, maybe you're a runner and you're training for a marathon, your body fat is dropping. You can just imagine this ancient system in your brain is thinking, oh my gosh, she's running from a tiger so much, we've got to save the resources. Let's not let her ovulate. So this is why you get into trouble with your period. You don't ovulate, you don't build up that shag carpet in your uterus. And these sort of things you often will see in women who are suffering from certain problems like anorexia or eating disorders, bulimia, things like that. So food definitely plays a role. You've heard me talk about how when you are drinking more than 3 to 6 servings of alcohol per week, that actually raises your bad estrogens. And I don't know of other foods that lower your estrogens. It's more the issue with body fat.
So what are your recommendations then for getting back in balance?
Yeah, so if you're low in estrogen, if you're struggling with some of these symptoms of low estrogen based on the quiz, or you just know this to be true, number one, Godfrey Protocol step one is to avoid caffeine. Cut out gluten. Eat more whole soy. Add flaxseed. Add it to your porridge in the morning. Have more orgasms. It turns out that raises your estrogen levels. Don't exercise too hard. Get acupuncture. We know that pomegranate's effective. You've heard me talk about vitamin E. Magnesium also is a Godfrey Protocol step one to raise your estrogen levels. Here's my favorite recommendation. If you learn nothing else today, if you're low in estrogen, step two of the Gottfried Protocol is your herbal therapies, and I'm a huge fan of maca. So maca's been shown to raise sex drive. It's been shown in menopausal women to lower depression, lower anxiety. I'm all for it. I put it into my smoothie pretty regularly, and it's the way that I increase my energy. I love it. Some of the other things that are effective include rhubarb, ginseng, And both valerian and hops, they also have been proven to help with the sleep disruption that happens in women with low estrogen. Now, sometimes if you're really desperate, if you're really miserable and your quality of life is suffering, this is one of those 1 to 5% of the times where if nothing else is working, you're trying the maca, you're taking these other things, you cut out the gluten, you cut out the caffeine, and you're still miserable, maybe your mood is bad, that's where you want to see your clinician and maybe consider the smallest dose and the shortest duration of some estrogen therapy. And if you have a uterus that has to be together with progesterone, right, because they have this tango. But for the most part, I'm not a big fan of going on estrogen unless you really need it. So let's move on now to another question.
So what happens to me once my estrogen is in balance?
Oh, yes. So here's what it looks like. You have regular periods. Estrogen and progesterone, as you've heard me say many times, work together on this one. If you're postmenopausal, you'll notice some of these other signs that I'm going to mention. Your joints and your vagina feel well lubricated and juicy. Orgasm has its lovely role in your sex life. You have that sense of dullness as a distant memory. You roll with the punches. You don't feel so stressed or overwhelmed. And you're sleeping well. You're sleeping well. You don't prefer sleep to sex with your partner. Your mood is stable throughout your menstrual cycle. And your brain is working. The brain fog lifts. Your memory and your recall improve. Okay, everybody, that is the end of audio 4. We've been talking all about estrogen, the archetype of femininity. So excited to be with you. We'll see you on the next audio.